Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Square. If you run a restaurant or business, Square has the tools to help you stay connected to customers, shift your business, and navigate this uniquely challenging time. Learn more at square.com/go/ferment.
HRN is offering complimentary business memberships to 50 Black, Indigenous, people of color-owned food businesses this summer. The deadline to apply is July 31st. Each business membership, a $500 value, is an advertising opportunity that will allow businesses disproportionately impacted by COVID-19 to connect with HRN's listening community and promote their work. To apply and review the terms and conditions, go to heritageradionetwork.org/biz.
Hello, and welcome to Foment About It on heritageradionetwork.org.
I'm Mary Izette.
And I'm Chris Kuzmi.
And we're your co-hosts through this weekly journey of all things fermented.
Somewhat weekly. Somewhat irregular kind of quarantine, like whenever we are able to do these things. Sometimes delayed, sometimes in advance, but wherever you find good podcasts, you can find us, hopefully. Heritage Radio Network, we're really proud to be part of this family. There's a lot of really great programming here, and we sincerely, if you found us through Heritage Radio Network, we implore you to check out the other shows, not just our fermentation shows. Speaking of fermentation, what have you been fermenting, Mary?
Well, we have had actually a remarkably busy week the last week or two. It kind of goes up and down. Most of you know, if you've listened, we own a brewery in New York City, and we are... Breweries are an essential businesses in New York, so we did not shut down. We had to pivot our business pretty much completely, and we just hit phase two, but that doesn't really mean that much for us. So we are basically serving as a beer counter, and we are canning. So we actually bought a canning line, which is super exciting. So we are getting trained on our new canning line. We bought it from ABE, who also made our brew system and most of our fermenting tanks, and... we're getting trained on that in mid-July, so we're super excited about that. Until then, we're canning all of our beers with Ironheart, who is a great mobile canner. They have really done a solid during this time, and we could not be more thankful for them. So anyway, it's been the busy couple weeks because we keep having to, you know, reevaluate and figure a new way to do something or solve a problem or whatever. There's something new all the time, which is exciting and a little exhausting, but mostly, you know, stimulating, and we're super excited to just be able to be in business and be making beer and doing what we do. So, but at home, we actually, I was doing some ferments from the Shockey's book, Fermented Vegetables. So the latest one was a curried dilly bean, which is pretty good. That's not quite done yet, but it's getting there. And then I had this fermented chili paste, which unfortunately I have to take a break from spicy food, but man, it is tasting really good. So I'm just going to let it keep fermenting. We joined a CSA, so we joined the 607 CSA, and we're getting a lot of lettuce, which is awesome. But we got some. Oh my God, why am I totally blanking? Napa cabbage. So I'm going to make some kimchi in the next day or two. I don't know. I've got a lot of other fermenting. The sourdough is kind
of... Let's pause there for a second. When you make that kimchi, kind of what's your plan there? Is there a salt content? Are you thinking about volume, or are you just going to throw some salt in there?
No, man. I haven't made kimchi in so long, I have to Google it. So I'm going to Google it or go to, you know, my favorite books.
Our favorite Foment About It episodes, perhaps.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, I could also do that. You're right. You're totally right. So many resources.
That's all right. Giving you guff because I did the same thing recently. And like, you just listen to our old episodes. It's fine.
That's true. You're totally right.
That's why
right.
We do this show.
Our sourdough bread baking has been put on hold, for one, just because we got so busy. But also, man, we don't have air conditioning. It's freaking hot in New York City right now, so there will be no bread baking. However, there's a lot of other things that we could do with sour discard.
We're going to do some biscuit baking.
That's true, yeah.
Damn sure.
I did make a big batch of, before it got too hot, of sourdough discard brown butter chocolate chip cookies. And man, I think those are the best chocolate chip cookies like we've ever made. And really, some of the best cookies I've ever had. Now, again, here we are. It's hot. We could maybe like make some cookies in our toaster oven, but I'm not turning on our oven for very long. But there's a lot of, so we'll probably mostly be working on stovetop sourdough discards like tortillas and all kinds of flatbreads that are easy and quick to make on the stovetop. The other exciting thing is that on the pro brewery side, Omega Yeast has come out with several new yeast strains. Mm-hmm. Including two new Kvike strains. So Kvike is probably my favorite like group of yeasts because they're just super cool. You know, they're these like older, you know, farmhouse strains of yeast that have been around for a long time, and people have been using in Norway and other European countries for a very long time. And they were basically kind of rediscovered by the modern brewing world, and in fact by Lars.
Garshall,
and then, you know, brought to this country, and Omega has had three Kvike yeast, which we've been using at Fifth Hammer for a while, but they just added two more to the collection. So the first is a Lutra Kvike, and it's actually it was one of the strains that was isolated from the Hornendahl Kvike blend, and it is a super clean fermenting Kvike yeast. And we actually hosted a Kvike event at a homebrewing Kvike event at Fifth Hammer during Beer Week. And this guy named Tyler, who is the Kvike boss, he is Kvike boss on
That's
Instagram.
Yeah.
Yep. And he had actually brought two Kvike beers, and one was a New Zealand Pilsner. And let me tell you, so obviously it was a faux Pilsner, but dude, it was so clean and so delicious. You would if you had just tasted this, you would never know that it was not a lager. So we've ordered this Lutra, and we're gonna ferment a very clean drinking, yeah, light, easy drinking virtual lager with it. So we're super excited about that.
Exactly, a pseudo lager, and we've named it.
Don't tell anybody.
Why not?
Because we're not there yet.
Come on.
Come on. Come on.
I think it's fun.
Okay, fine, whatever.
All right, it's called I Can't Believe It's Not Lager.
Yeah. Anyway,
so after that, I can't believe it's not butter. Kind of together.
So we're...
We don't really... I mean, we haven't used this yeast yet, but, you know, we're hoping that we can't believe it's not lager.
Yeah. But, hey, man, I put my faith in Omega. Those folks are really good. Then the other one that they have come out with is SB Kvike. It's ESPE. And it is originating from the village of Grodås. I'm probably butchering that pronunciation, in Norway. It has the unique profile of lychee, pear, and tropical fruit cup. And again, it is a 90-plus fermenter. But you could do it lower, but why? Why would you do it lower? 90 degrees, baby. It's summer. So anyway, we haven't tried that one out, but I'm looking forward to trying that one as well. We're kind of bantering around some beer ideas to do it with. Anyway.
So SB, is SB an animal? No, right?
I don't know. They don't have their animal. They don't have an animal for it yet.
But Lutra is a
Eurasian otter.
Eurasian otter, which is kind of fun.
Yep.
For the lager thing.
Omega did some new branding, and it's pretty cool, man. Anyway, Omega, I love those guys. We're gonna have them on. So once we use this Lutra yeast and have that beer in hand, we're gonna have those guys on to talk more about what they're doing out in Chicago and what kind of strains that the new strains and what else they're looking out for. But anyway, on today we have another local New York City brewer on the line. So we have Christopher Ganzi. He is the owner, chef, and brewer of Dale View Biscuits and Beer here in New York City. Hey, Chris.
Hey, Chris.
How's it going, guys?
Pretty good.
Pretty good. We understand that you're sitting in a sunroom in South Carolina right now, quarantined, before you come back here and be quarantined again.
Yes, I am. I'm swinging along and enjoying this conversation we're having so far.
That was kind of a longer intro, but I don't know. We haven't. Yeah.
Hey, you know, we're just back into this thing, and thanks to everybody for sticking with us or rejoining us on this new journey in post pandemic times. Or no, still.
What are you talking about? This pandemic is still going.
That's why.
Be afraid. Respect science.
Yes,
wear your damn mask.
Respect it. That's why everything is still going on.
Yes.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
I'm staying in New York City where everybody in my immediate, I mean, I don't really go very many places. I mostly just go from our apartment to the brewery. But let me tell you, there's pretty strong mask wearing around here. And I'm very proud of my fellow New Yorkers who are doing that.
Yeah. It's been crazy for businesses. And Chris, you have a business here in New York. And you, when Mary said your title, you're owner, chef, and brewer. So it's not just a brewery. It is a restaurant. And how long have you been brewing? What is your journey up into what you're doing? And first of all, what is Daleview Biscuits and Beer? And how'd we get here? This is wide open, man.
Yes. So what is Daleview Biscuits and Beer? Daleview Biscuits and Beer is like a cafe / brewery. I want to be a tap room right now. Mm-hmm. We do gluten-free biscuits, gluten-free food all the way across. But one thing I could not compromise on was the beer. So the beer has to be full of gluten and full of deliciousness. So that's what Daleview Biscuits and Beer is. Like, you know, a place for people who can't, it's hard to find, a place where people, it's hard for them to find gluten-free food and come in and enjoy themselves and not realize they're eating a gluten-free meal. Mm-hmm. You said, ask me how long I've been brewing. My son is 9 years old now, so I've been brewing for 9 years. And all, yes.
Are you saying your son drove you to drink? I mean,
no, I was drinking a little bit before that because, you know, I do have 2 more kids. But it all started in the Finger Lakes on Father's Day 9 years ago, where they gave me a Mr. Brew kit.
Yeah.
Up until that time, I didn't really drink beer. I was like really more whiskey, bourbon guy, and I was exploring the journeys of wine. So they gave me this kit. We went home 2 days later. I cracked it open. I opened the can, followed directions, made the beer, tasted it. It's like, it's okay. Made a couple more. Then went out and purchased some beers to see what it should taste like. And then I said, this Mr. Brew kit is too easy. Making beer cannot be this easy. Not at all. So I did my research on the interwebs at the time. And I went and I started doing brewing a bag, all grain. I can't remember the brew store that was in Gowanus.
Brooklyn Brew Shop.
Brooklyn.
Yeah,
Brooklyn
or no, Shop. Sorry.
Brooklyn.
It wasn't Brooklyn Brew Shop. Sorry. It was Brooklyn Homebrew.
Yeah, Brooklyn Homebrew.
Yeah.
So I went over there.
Ben and Danielle, man.
I went over there. I purchased a pot. I purchased a bag. I purchased grain. And I came back home and made my first IPA. And it started from there. And I started doing more research. I started drinking a lot more beer. And I realized beer is a lot more complex than I thought. It wasn't just a light yellow substance that people drink at a football game. And, and I started making beer, and my wife started getting aggravated with me because my wife has a gluten allergy. And she's like, every time she comes in, it's like, it's like a bread factory in here. So from there, I brewed beer. I started brewing beer for any time we had a special occasion in the house. People drank the beer. People enjoyed the beer. And then when I made beer for a fundraiser I did, people drank it, liked it. It's like, you should open a brewery. I'm like, nah, that's not what I want to do. My vision was to go back to grad school and get my master's in music education because I wanted to be an orchestra teacher in New York City. But that didn't happen. And that's probably won't happen with all the budget cuts, but that's a different story.
Right.
For another day.
Crazy.
So brewing for personal enjoyment. And then 1 year, my wife went to the Netherlands for an education conference. And I'm like, you know what? What am I going to do with these kids? This is the weekend. I said, you know what? I'm putting them to work. We're going to make some biscuits.
There you go.
We're going to invite people over. We put it on Facebook. Invited people over. They had biscuit sandwiches. People enjoyed it. I said, you know, we're going to do this again. And next time I'm going to brew a beer. So I brewed a brown ale and biscuits and called it the next event, biscuits and beer. That's where the name came from. People came over. Since I couldn't sell beer, so if you brought a growler or a cup, you can drink as much beer as you want just buying a biscuit. People ate the biscuits, enjoyed the biscuits, liked the beer. And then 2 months later, there's a brewery in the neighborhood, and they let me come over and take over their Friday night, take the kitchen over on Friday nights for the remainder of that spring, that summer, and that fall. And now we're here with Delhi Business as a storefront location. And we run a two-barrel brew house. We've thrown away lots of beer. We kept lots of beer. The neighborhood is enjoying what we're doing so far, and the beer is getting better as time comes. Mm-hmm. And now we're in the pandemic, and we opened back up. We opened back up 4 weeks ago with food and some beer. And me being a smaller brewery, packaging wasn't an option, so. I didn't think it was worth trying to do staying open for the first couple months, because it would end up costing more money than it did at the end of the day. So I took time right. off, headed to South Carolina, put a plan in action on how I could be efficient and effective when I did come back, which is going on now. And now we're selling beer. Now we're selling more beer than we did before, and just
awesome
as before.
People are ready.
It's been a wild journey.
Yeah. How long have you been with your wife?
I've known my wife since 1999, and we've been married for 13 years.
For 13,
cool.
Yeah. Right.
And so you've been dating her and eating gluten free for the most part when together, for 21 years.
No, we didn't find out she was gluten free till after our first child. She would always complain that she wasn't feeling well, always congested, you know, and always hurting. And then she finally went to the doctor, and they said, "Oh, you're allergic to wheat and gluten." And that's when it started. That's when we started eating gluten-free, at least in the house. And and we had the issue of, like, every time you go to a restaurant, even in the city, the gluten-free options were very nil to none, or there was a huge risk of cross-contamination. So we knew that we both enjoyed cooking. So we just, like, you know, we thought about the places we enjoy eating and thought about recipes we enjoyed, and we just converted it to gluten-free recipe, and that's how that came about. The business came about because she went out of town, and also too, I didn't tell that story. One of my kids had a class party, and every parent was supposed to bring something. So I made biscuits out of the blue. I called my grandmother, asked for her recipe, and that's where it started. You know, she gave it to me. And what she gave me did not turn out how her business came out, because that it wasn't exact measurements. It was based off of her hand and her feel. So
yep.
Once I got the feel right, the business did become yep. better.
Cool. And then that was with regular flour, not gluten-free, when you first started making biscuits?
The first batch of biscuits was with regular flour. And yep. then since my wife was out of town also, so when she came back, I couldn't give her glutinous biscuits.
Right.
So I started experimenting with different gluten-free flours, and each flour is made, it's different. Even if it says it's one for one, a cup for a cup, each one is not the same. And they're not all meant for baking, frying, or anything. You have to find that particular one for whatever you want to do. Like the flour I use, I would not use to make a cake.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't think I've ever dealt with gluten-free flour at all, but I'm not the biggest baker. I think Mary can speak more to kind of think and how to relate. Was it challenging to deal with hydration and measurements? You know, you said it's not one-to-one exactly. And you said there are different gluten-free flours to deal with. And also, you're in South Carolina. Does moisture in the air and the humidity deal with or change? You know, do you have to cook differently in August in New York than...
Yeah, the heat, yes, the heat does, the humidity does make a big difference in the baking, especially when I'm doing the biscuits. But also, too, I found using the buttermilk I use in the city that I get from a farm that's not less than 100 miles away is different. And even though it's a full-fat buttermilk, it's also different than the full-fat buttermilk I got here from a local farm. So it's like I have to use more... Sometimes I use a little bit more buttermilk to get the same reaction with the baking soda and the baking powder, or a little bit less. The biggest difference is baking time with the temperature and the humidity change. Here, the biscuits bake a lot, because I baked some a couple days ago. The biscuits bake a lot faster here, and they rise a lot more. It could be whatever yeast or bacteria that's in the air, natural yeast or bacteria that's in the air that's causing that. But they rise a lot better here than they do in the city.
Interesting. That's really interesting.
Can you talk a little bit about what flours that you've used, or do you have tips and tricks or recommendations for people that are interested in, you know, exploring some gluten-free options?
If you're gonna bake with flour, don't use a flour that has chickpea in it, because you're gonna get that that pea, that nutty flavor when you cook. But my favorite flour to use for baking biscuits is the brand Cup for Cup. If I'm making a cake or making brownies and I'm going to add flour to it, I would use Arnold's 1-to-1. Like I play with so many and I use a garbanzo bean with a rice mixture if I'm going to fry chicken.
Cool.
Or make a roux.
That's not sounding good to me right now.
Ooh, I'm looking at this. So I have a computer in front of me. So I'm looking at it's Cup for Cup and this is pretty cool because they have mixes. So it seems like if people want to explore, you know, the world of gluten-free, this is a good way to do it because they actually have like a fried chicken mix. They have yellow cake mix. They have a pizza crust mix, pie crust mix. That seems like a cool way to get into, you know, playing around with gluten-free. That's like not as risky, you know, or not, you know, kind of an easier way to like get used to it and get a good feeling for it.
Yeah. Much lower cost of entry. Yes. Yeah. I don't do any of that stuff I pretty much make everything myself. If I do make a pie, my wife requires me to make a pie.
Yep.
Because I'm the baker. I'm more of the baker and she's more of the cook.
Yep.
Inside the actual house. And she's like, I'll just make my own pie crust.
Cool. Yeah.
We're going to take a really quick break. Thanks for listening for a minute about it.
We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Square. You might know Square from their little white card readers, but Square has a lot more tools that can help businesses, especially now that they're having to figure out how to safely reopen and make things work in this new normal. So many are stepping up to the challenge, like Fifth Hammer Brewing in Long Island City. To adapt, Fifth Hammer's co-owner Mary Izette created a Square online store so customers could browse available beers, build an order, and safely pick up cans from the tap room.
I was able to set up our online store within 24 hours of moving to a to-go model.
The Square online store allowed Fifth Hammer to keep beer production going, serve their local customers, and retain employees.
It's also very easy to train your staff on. They will be able to receive, fulfill, and provide your customers with a contactless pickup in no time.
If you're a business owner, Square wants you to know it has tools that can help you shift your business, like Fifth Hammer is doing. No matter if you're brewing beer, baking bread, or mixing to-go cocktails, you can start taking online orders in minutes with pickup and delivery. And if you're selling in person, Square can help you accept contactless payments. All these tools work together and they're all in one place. You just need a Square account to get started. See all the ways Square can help your business right now by visiting square.com/go/ferment.
Welcome back to Ferment About It on heritageradionetwork.org. We're sitting here with Christopher Ganzi. He's in his sunroom in South Carolina, self-quarantined. He's going to come back to New York very soon, right back to business. What does it look like for you when you come back to New York? You guys have been open for 1 month out of the pandemic and moving a lot more beer and a lot of biscuits right now. What does the immediate future look like? I mean, we're living in a lot of unknowns, so, and it's a weird question because nobody knows, right?
You know what's crazy?
Yeah.
Sorry, Chris. I just asked and answered.
You know what's crazy? I'm thinking about, not on a brewery side, but I'm thinking about expanding the restaurant portion, the kitchen, the portion.
Yep.
For like wholesaling. And just more, a little bit more square footage.
Cool.
Because to get a legit commercial kitchen. So in my mind, I'm thinking about expansion. What better time than never, than now, to start looking for a bigger place
More
square footage.
For sure.
And, you know, it's a blessing. I have the farm brewery license, so I can carry that license with me for several more places. So I'm looking for a bigger location with a commercial size kitchen in the city. Especially Brooklyn, and hopefully in my neighborhood, because I'm able to produce enough beer for myself, and we're also in the works with, on top of expansion, in Pelzer, South Carolina, we're looking at a historic building where my wife's mother worked 25 years ago in the mill town, purchasing this building, and
wow.
Possibly doing a 5-barrel system here with biscuits and beer in South Carolina.
Oh man, that sounds awesome.
Cool.
That sounds awesome, especially since the biscuits fluff more down there, you said. Or they rise more.
I gotta say that makes sense because I think a lot of places, you know, a lot of more places offer gluten-free options, but I can imagine that not all chefs at those places, you know, really want to mess with making a gluten-free product in their own kitchen. So that would actually make a lot of sense to me.
Yes.
Also on the brewery side, you're a 2-barrel system here in the city?
Yes, I'm a 2-barrel system.
2 barrels, and you're in the basement of your establishment?
Yes, basement brewing at its best. Or
that's great.
Best.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean I come from that you know, with brewing at 5-Weight Gastro Brewery, 2 barrels at a time. What does your cold room look like, and what does chilling beer or temperature control look like for you at your estate?
Well, most of all, everything is pretty much lagers. Ales.
Ales,
So we can get it. We can get it coming out of the boil kettle. We can get it down to around 66 degrees, and since it's in the basement, the temperature doesn't really pass 72. Mm-hmm. So we have pretty much control there. We just recently purchased a glycol system, so we can start cold crashing, but have been, you know, pushing the fermenters into the walk-in to cold crash.
Yep. I know it well. Yep. yep.
That's what we'll be doing there. Then we pull to the bright tank, carbonate, transfer to cakes.
Oh, you got a bright tank. Yeah, fancy you.
I have 2 bright tanks. I got the 2-barrel system came from FCC Brewing right outside of Utica, and they had 2 bright tanks with it, and I couldn't pass it up. So
cool, man. That's great. Yeah, I was a little underfunded on my thing, but when you roll it out, do you have 3 wheels or 4? Just curious.
Three wheels.
Or 4, yeah. Your fermenters aren't casters, right? You're rolling things over to crash.
There are 4 wheels.
Lucky, see, that's nice. that 3 thing, the triangle, like just the stability is crazy. Anyway, that was rough.
Like we use bubble barrels. I don't know if you heard bubble barrels. They're fermenters.
What were you brewing before pandemic? And what are you guys pouring right now down there?
Right now we have the IPA called Slamming Cadillac Doors, which is about to kick it's going to probably be more like a kick this weekend. It was down to our last keg anyway.
Yep.
We have a pale ale we just put out last Thursday called Palm My Hand. And we're just pouring a Trappist-style beer called Trap House. We got plenty of that. We have plenty of that left. We have two wheat beers. One is Can I Get a Weakness? That's about to kick, hopefully, this weekend. And then another wheat beer called Viola's Angels. And Viola is my grandmother's name. So angels are her daughters.
Cool. Do you have a brewer working right now for you?
Yes, I do have. Yes, I do.
Okay.
So he's gonna be a little surprised on Monday when he's by himself. transforming.
You gotta start summer. You've done it.
Yep.
But he said this is what he said he wanted to do. So this is his time to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So I recently saw that that Bitter and Esters has put out a recipe that you're working on, and I want you to introduce it and what it kind of what it goes towards.
Okay, the name of the beer is My Skin Is Black, and that verse comes from a Nina Simone song for Call for Women.
Mm-hmm.
So we brewed this beer way before the pandemic. Like the idea for this beer came way before the pandemic and way before the uprising that's been happening over the past several weeks.
Sure.
Me and Chris Ennis sat down and talked about how could we help diversify beer.
Mm-hmm.
From a selfish standpoint, as always, and also as a outreach standpoint. We had several meetings, and then we came up and was like, you know what? Why don't we develop an internship? So when the pandemic hit, it actually gave us a lot more time to sit down and talk about what the internship was should look like. So right now it's a 4-week experience for people of color, you know, people of color, women, any group that's left out of traditional craft brew scene.
Sure.
Bringing them in, taking through a 4-week experience, a paid internship, where they can see the back of house, brewing side, packaging side, front of house, the marketing aspect, and even as well as the administrative side of it, because we realize it comes to exposure. Like if you're not, you've never been exposed to it, you never know there's a possibility.
Exactly.
So we decided. We originally planned on May 8th, we were going to come and do a collaboration brew. We were going to invite all people of color from all the breweries in the city to come by, hang out. We were going to do a cookout. But as you know, May, we were shut down.
Yeah.
So there was no brewing happening. We were going to take the money that we raised from this beer. Let me back up a little bit because I'm moving ahead. So we're going to brew this beer. We had a plan to find several different chefs to do pairings along with the beer and do it as a ticket and sell it as a ticketing event to raise money to help fund this internship. And we want to have a proof of concept before we actually rolled it out to a wider audience. But with the pandemic happening, that pushed us back. And we were lucky enough that the Brewers, New York City Brewers Guild brought us in and to help us out with a place where we could put the money and rolling in some additional support on parts of the internship that we're not as strong at on.
Mm-hmm.
So cool. I brewed a strong ale. And it's going to be bottled. This My Skin Is Black. It's going to be bottled, carbonated, and it should be ready in the next 4 weeks. Because I was supposed to be bottling it this week, but since I'm in South Carolina, I have to hold off.
Sure.
Because like you said, quarantining.
That's great.
So myself and Chris Ennis decided to do is we're going to sell however many bottles we have, you know, make bottling and glassware and do a virtual tasting within the next 4 or 5 weeks. We haven't put a date. We haven't solidified a date, but that's where my Skin is Black came from and for funding, help funding this internship.
Cool. I think that's great. Awesome. Yeah. I think that's one of the issues is that even breaking into the beer industry is challenging. It's a lot of networking and connections and kind of, you know, I think everybody, just kind of, they need to hire somebody. They kind of go with the lowest hanging fruit at sometimes. That's probably not the right term, but you know, it's easier to kind of pull from within the existing industry than to really make an effort and reach out to outside the industry and right. really, you know, and sometimes that means, you know, training somebody or, you know, or really going somewhere. Cause we've been talking about this at Fifth Hammer well. Yeah. And actually, I just went over. So we live in South Williamsburg, and I just went over to Randolph. Flint Whistler was there, and Flint and I had a mask on, socially distanced chat, and actually this came up. So so I'm super excited that you guys are doing this, and anything that we can do to support you guys, we are more than happy to do so.
Absolutely.
But I think, that's the thing, is that we need to get, you know, we need to not be such a, even though I think a lot of people want to be more open and inclusive and welcoming, it's sometimes hard to do so. And people don't have the resource, you know, they don't know where to go or, you know, there's no system in place to really have. So I think this is great in, you know, kind of making steps towards making the brewing industry more inclusive.
The issues are large. They include, you know, a lot of socioeconomic issues, but but not having a face in I guess the socioeconomic issues are why there's not a very diverse platform of brewers or people in the industry. But that kind of unfolds on itself insofar as like, okay, if you don't see people like you, like it doesn't even seem like a welcome industry necessarily to be, or even inviting if you don't. So tackling those challenges is really important. And things like this internship and funding of this internship are great steps to helping that happen and diversify the market.
And you know, and coming into the world of craft beer, like it's a different experience for me because I grew up as a clapback. I played the bass all through my young years, and it was classically always in orchestras. And orchestras, especially in the South, were never diverse. So it was easy for me to be able to transition into put myself into a situation that I don't see as many people that look like me in that situation.
But right.
It was based off of being exposed to something different altogether, which helped me make that transition to the brew world in itself, in a sense. If that makes any sense.
It does.
Yep.
It does. Do you find any, let's go to the music thing for a second. Do you find any parallels of making music in beer?
You know, sometimes I see making beer like preparing for an audition, for a major audition. Mm-hmm. And this 20 days practice is like crap. And then some days, like, oh. And then some days, oh, I'm hitting everything, you know, it's flowing, it's beautiful. And then occasionally you hit it just right. When it comes that time to do it live, that you're like, oh, I actually like this one.
Yep.
The palm of my hand is actually my favorite beer right now that I've actually made since we've been brewing for the past year. And my wife asks me this question every day. She's like, so do you like the beer? And I'm like, it's okay. She's like, it's okay. What do you mean it's okay? I'm like, it's not good yet.
That's our job, though, as the brewer. Like, I'm the same way. Like, there's a very and same way with music too, right? Did you like that solo? Did you like how do you think you played today? Like, you know, it's our job to be critical of ourselves and just constant improvement is a way of life. So
we also you're probably harder on your beer than all brewers, pretty much, or good brewers, I think, are much harder on their beer than than the audience. I mean, Kuzme and I had, we just came out with a double IPA, and Kuzme's was kind of meh about it. And the rest of us are like, man, we love this beer. This is great. You nailed this. So I think, you know, that's the thing is you're probably harder on your beer than, you're definitely harder on your beer than anybody else.
That's true. Yeah. Yes.
Right? Yeah. But always striving to be better is the ultimate goal anyway, like, yeah, right?
Is that thing perfect practice makes perfect?
Yeah.
Yep.
So wait, what was the beer that you said you're really digging right now?
It's a pale ale. It's a late hop pale ale. There's no hop burn, like no hop residue. But it's a pale ale that is like nice and refreshing. It's like only 4.6%, so I can drink like two or three and walk home and be fine.
Yep. Awesome. We've been super busy, but I think we should get down there. We'll have to make it to get down there.
Come in 2 weeks once I'm finished quarantining.
Let's do it. I'm in.
Well, we might have to go before. I don't want to miss this beer now that you're talking about it.
That's right. Two barrels goes fast.
Yes. Yep. And you guys are close enough to the park that you can have, you know, maybe we'll come and get some biscuits and beer and then we'll go have a little picnic in the park. That's something that we haven't been doing. We haven't been doing much leisurely stuff lately. So that'll be a nice excuse for us to have some time. Also, I've got some friends that live down there too. So it'd be cool to get together with them in a, you know, have a socially distanced get together.
For everybody listening, where is there and how do we find out more information about
Biscuits and Beers? I'm located in Prospect Lover's Garden. Our address is 1170 Nostrand Avenue. You can go to biscuitsandbeer.nyc to see our current food menu and also our current beers that we have on tap. And you can also follow us at Biscuits and Beer on Instagram.
Cool. And if you guys are not familiar with Prospect's Lefferts Garden, it's basically the southeast corner of Prospect Park. So you guys are only a few blocks from the park.
We're like a 10-minute walk from the park.
Yeah. And I think, you know, that's a thing right now, at least. I think a lot of times, you know, people are looking for places to kind of get out, but in a safe manner. And I think, you know, that the parks do offer that, especially, you know, I haven't been going to parks on weekends, but if you get a chance to, you know, to grab some food or a beverage and, you know, find kind of carve out a little place for you in the park, that's a really nice thing to do this summer. I mean, it always has been a nice thing, but it's even more special. I think
something about fresh air.
Yep, for sure. What are your hours right now?
We're open Thursday through Sunday from 12 to 7. And if you make a special request, I'll open up for somebody because normally I'm there every day anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Yep.
Fantastic. Well, man, it's been such a pleasure to talk to you. And I can't wait for you to come back. I can't wait to see you. And, you know, I can't wait to share some beard tricks and beer tricks. Cool. You have a...
I can't wait to come over to see how your master system works.
Yeah, man. I would love to have you over. And I know we spoke a little bit offline about, you know, hopefully doing a collaboration soon. We'd love to do that. And I'd love to host you over there and figure out some stuff. And maybe some from, if we make something, I'd love to contribute proceeds to the My Skin is Black scholarship fund. Yeah, yep. That'd be super.
Also, if for those of you that are homebrewing, the My Skin is Black is available from Bitter and Esters. That's bitterandesters.com. I'm pretty sure they do nationwide shipping. And they will be donating 15% of the proceeds of every sale of this recipe kit to the New York City Brewers Guild Farm Brewery internship program, which is what we've been talking about. So that is available, you know, for everybody. They have a bunch of different options. They have extract kit, all grain kit, and 1, 2.5, and 5 gallons. So I would grab it while you can.
Yes, do it.
Cool. Awesome. Support well, we local. Look forward to talking to you. Good, safe travels back.
Thanks for listening to Ferment About It.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us on Ferment About It.
Yeah. Cheers, yeah. Chris.
Cheers.
Take care.
Ferment About It.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please, join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
This program is powered by Simplecast.
I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.